if she comes back? What if there's no way of moving back? What when your face falls apart? Have you got enough time?
From the land of the sky and to high strangers around the globe, this is Joshua P. Warren's Speaking of Strange, hosted by Vance Pollock.
And the world is becoming more and more insane every day. Welcome to the program that gives you breaking news and insight into the paranormal and downright weird, where the unusual becomes usual, and we don't just discuss it. We go into the field to investigate. I am Vance Pollock, joined by investigator Shelley Wright. How are you, Shelley?
Great. How are you?
Doing great. And producer Sam, the Animal Steel. Sam?
Yes, sir.
How are you?
Oh, a little sore. A little, got knotted up. Doing a lot of heavy lifting lately.
Need to go have some deep tissue massage.
Yes, yes. That sounds delicious.
And a very special guest in the studio, somebody that I had the most musical admiration a person can muster for. None other than Stevie Tombstone. How are you, Stevie?
I'm great. And I'm glad to be here.
We'll talk a little bit about your music, because you've been at it for a while, and I'm sure you've got some stories from the road and beyond, and we might get to some music. You never know. We actually use, if you folks have been listening since I've been hosting, you have heard me drop little samples of Stevie's work. Back in the mid-late 90s, you were the front man for a rowdy bunch of kids out of Atlanta, Georgia, called the Tombstones.
It was a gentleman's club.
And we sometimes play Black Cat. That was an early one for you guys, right?
Yeah, that was one of our first.
85 or 6-ish?
Probably 85 when we started playing that.
Pick up them bones and rattle them hard. So if you notice one of the pieces of bumper music during Joshua P. Warren's Speaking of Strange that gets about a minute in and then starts with that line, pick up them bones and rattle them hard, that's none other than the man sitting across from me tonight who you are going to have the pleasure of hearing from, Stevie Tombstone. So all I've got in mind is, hey, I brought Stevie.
Yay.
Turn on the microphones and see what happens. So we got a couple hours to do that, and then of course Dark 30, Mr. Mobius, and the SOS news team have got the dirt. Yeah, so of course that'll give you a couple hours to get the kids to bed, because this is not family-friendly material that happens in the Dark 30. But the first couple hours, I would say that what we'll do here is elucidate and maybe blow minds a little bit. Stevie, is it okay if we get a little personal about maybe some paranormal, ghostly sort of things that you've...
I've known you a little while. I guess it's okay, man. It's not our first date.
When I introduced you to Josh Warren, you played a show at the Byrish House a few months back, and it was just fortuitous. Like I say, one week you're posting, you're down in Austin, Texas, and you're talking about getting on the road again, and I commented on Facebook, Stevie, when you coming to Asheville? And he said, how about next weekend if you can find me a place to play? And I took that on upon myself as a challenge, because long story short, I heard about the Tombstones when I went into Tower Records in New Orleans, Louisiana, about 1989. Tower Records was in the old Jackson Brewery building down there on the riverfront in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. And Tower Records was a pretty cool chain. And I went in there and I saw this green record with like this monstrous font, kind of reminded me of famous monsters, Tombstones, and just this stark black and white graphic on a green background. And I said, this has got to be my kind of music. And I flipped it over and read about read titles like The Axeman of New Orleans, and it was like $6.99 the EP. And I said, I gotta go for broke. Yep, I gotta go for broke. See what these guys are all about. Twilight Records, Atlanta, Georgia. And I took that one home, you know, because you're traveling. I was on the road up from Florida in New Orleans, first time or one of my very early visits to New Orleans. And we've been talking about first impressions of New Orleans a lot here recently, because Shelley just in the last couple of months visited New Orleans for the first time. And we've talked a lot about your reaction. You love the place now, Shelley. You intend to go back.
I loved it. I intend to go back. I was very at home in all the voodoo shops and in the vampire speakeasy.
Uh-huh. So Shelley's had a good time. I was having a good time down there when I was a teenager, and I found the Tombstones record, and I went home and I put it on the turntable, and I think the first track I heard was probably Tombstone Tales, Widow's Tears and Banshee Wails, right?
That's right.
And it was like poetry to me. It was like a sort of a dark teenage voodoo poetry. Maybe some of that. Swampabilly. You said in those days people didn't even talk about psychobilly, but you might kind of get categorized with that sort of psychobilly thing. Reverend Horton Heat, I guess, popularized it.
To some degree because of the blues bass. But we were much more bluesy, I think.
Yeah. There were groups doing similar things. We've talked about Gun Club. And,
oh, yeah.
So there was that sort of thing going on, but it definitely had this this Southern Swamp vibe. And it was, maybe some Cramps
it was
feel
every,
there.
Every,
a little.
Everything that I had rolled around in before I got there, I guess.
And in Atlanta, you kicked around with a lot of people that certainly had bigger hits nationally than the Tombstones, because you guys became sort of the voice of the underground, playing what, at the Metro down Atlanta? And
we played all the
sort of underground clubs of the day.
Clubs where the new music was happening.
You were chummy with some of the guys from Georgia Satellites, and did you know any of the Black Crowes dudes?
Yeah, I mean we were all playing in different clubs. They weren't even the Black Crowes probably at that point.
Yeah,
and even when they first made the transition, but everybody was. There was a music scene in town, and there was a music scene in Athens, and one in Emory. And everybody was, there was a lot of great players, and a lot of good people made it out of there, you know. And it was just cool to be around.
Well, what
and still be around?
Yeah, right. What kind of inspired you as a teenage rock and roller to, I don't know, sort of cloak yourself in the gothic
stuff?
Was it a personal thing? Were there a lot of dark experiences, or was it more of just a stage presence you decided to develop? Or
I think it was I was always into the kind of, well, the Tombstones thing came out of a comic idea that I had to do a like a Tales from the Crypt type thing, but make it an audio, you know, a list of songs,
right?
So that's what that was all about. It was art, and it was a joke, but I took everything to the hilt, you know. Sometimes I'll stay on something for several years before I give up.
It was kind of so, around the time Creepshow was coming out.
I mean, so that was kind of how that came out. But I was because I started out playing roots music when I was a kid, and then I got into like Alice Cooper and stuff. So I guess, and then so when I heard like goth music or the Misfits or the Cramps or anything like that, I thought it was kind of cool, and that ended up like a one-time concept ended up like being a long-term shtick, you know, and an ongoing theme. But it was, you know, I use ghost stories and stuff from my childhood. Our drummer, we would always, he was a writer, so he was always clipping out magazine stories and stuff. And the weirder we got, the more attention we got. So it kind of snowballed.
Right. Got to play with a lot of the legendary national touring acts, opening for the Ramones, etc. I see show flyers from Atlanta, late 80s. There's the Tombstones right up there with you.
We were a regional thing. It could have gone a little further, but we were too much of a mess to make it out of our zone there.
So. Right. Well, that aspect of your musical career, almost ancient history now, but your songwriting evolved so that now, I mean, you still do get on stage with other players from time to time, but what you've got a catalog of original songs that you can basically go out troubadour and hit a place with your guitar and play a couple hours of original music, and it's stuff that I've been following since the 90s. I mean, just some very powerful songwriting. Maybe we'll get into where that comes from. I think maybe writing great original music is akin to spirit channeling in a way.
I mean, there's some songs that write themselves, you know.
Yeah, mysterious stuff, and I think...
If you get out of your own way, that's what I like to say.
I often hear from songwriters that you can't force this stuff. The good stuff just kind of happens, right?
Yep.
Folks, we are chatting with Stevie Tombstone on Joshua P. Warren Speaking of Strange. I'm Vance Pollock. Thanks for joining us. Spring has sprung, of course. It's a rainy, dreary sort of weather here in the mountains, and it's the perfect time to settle in and listen to a new edition of Speaking of Strange, and we'll delve into some more dark goodness after this break.
Between those trees, nobody seems to know. A flickering fire, a flame in the breeze, leaves fall and rises aglow. The glow. The dancing of torches like birds on a wire, watch as they all fade away. Hovering beacons forged from the fire, or maybe a trick our eyes play.
Welcome back to Speaking of Strange. I'm your host, Vance Pollock. On behalf of Joshua P. Warren, this is the place where we talk ghosts and we talk the paranormal, and we talk about experiences that sane people don't talk about in public. That's why we've got Stevie Tombstone here. Nobody has accused you of being a sane man.
Not by government standards, my friend.
Oh, goodness. If you've had the pleasure of holding a copy of the Tombstones Preaching, Praying, Guitar Playing in your hands, or for that matter, Twang from the Grave, you did a collection of some Tombstone stuff put out on CD a few years back, right?
We had a lot of loose marbles rolling around, so.
Yeah. So Twang from the Grave on CD, that one might even still be out there, may still be available, but it's that 12-inch EP Preaching, Praying, Guitar Playing that did it for me way back, you know, 25-plus years ago. And there's a number on there called Nobody, and it's a song delivered in the voice of a lonely spirit who is wandering the railroad tracks. And that tale is based on one of these popular Carolina ghost light stories.
Yeah.
Is that something your mom told you as a kid?
My grandma would sing us that melody for the chorus when we were kids to keep us, I guess, either to put us to sleep or keep us in the bed.
One's as good as the next, right?
And I just came up with it. It popped in my head at band rehearsal, you know, however many years later, and I made it, you know, threw some verses around it, and it turned into a song, and it wasn't supposed to be as catchy as it was, but it did pretty good on the radio, actually.
Yeah, that kind of became the Tombstones anthem, one of their most popular songs, right? Nobody. And so when your grandma sang the melody to you, it was already associated with a ghost story?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they would tell us he was looking for his head. You know, that was the whole. But not in a really weird way. It was just a matter of fact. You know what I mean?
Kind of like a Carolina Railroad version of Headless Horseman or something. Huh?
Yeah, pretty much.
And basically what they'll say about a lot of these old railroad ghost light stories, and there are a number of them across the Carolinas and other parts of the country, I'm sure. These ghost light stories basically revolve on a remote place, revolve around a remote area, sort of. They're rather akin to the Brown Mountain lights in some senses, but it's usually just an isolated single light, usually. Maybe along an old rail bed, even an abandoned railroad line in some cases. And you're walking through the woods at night, and here comes a light out of the woods towards you down the side of the railroad tracks, and there's nothing there. And it kind of evaporates or vanishes. And generally, it's a story of somebody carrying a lantern looking for their lost head from that accident, you know, 100 years ago on the rail line. So the Tombstones... Nobody. This is a play on words. It's definitely got the Marty Feldman from Young Frankenstein bit going there. I ain't got
Grandma's
nobody.
Grandma's way ahead of her time, man.
Good stuff. And was this the same grandma that plays a role in this next story by chance, or is this a grandma on the other side? You know, where I'm going with this. I got to see you playing at the Root Bar.
I know where you're headed.
You kind of taken up a residency at the Root Bar on Sunday afternoons when you're in town.
It's my office when I'm in town.
Right? Root Bar residency with Stevie Tombstone. No, I mean... seriously, Sunday afternoons at the Root Bar in East Asheville, laid back, beautiful view. I mean, you sit there in the lounge and you look out on the mountains and you listen to Stevie Tombstone playing some great tunes.
It's a low impact,
right? Tip jar and you know,
laid back.
A suitcase full of CDs for sale. You got to check that. I was trying to get Shelly out there a few weeks back, and it just didn't. You have yet to see Stevie.
I know, and I will. I will. I can't remember what was going on.
You got to fix that. Got to fix that, lady. You told a story about a friend who contacted you.
Some friends up in Pennsylvania that I that I'm close to, but I don't see him all the time, you know, because I travel so much. And one night, my friend started texting me that he was concerned about me. He'd done this like maybe once before, and I just said, "Yeah, you know, that's cool. I appreciate your concern." Well, then he hit me back up a little while later, like 6 months later, maybe. And he said that he wasn't really asleep. It was like a lucid dream thing. And this isn't a normal occurrence for him, but he kept having these lucid dreams. And it was directed at him to get a hold of me and relay something to me, that he was having a hard time getting the message. So I said, okay. And then he hit me back up a few hours later again. He said, "No, I'm not kidding. This isn't letting up until I deliver the message." I said, "Okay, that's cool." So he told me that this lady was trying to tell him to tell me to be careful and look out for a certain place that I would be. I'm on the road all the time, traveling, and there was concern that I was going to get injured or hurt coming in or out of one of the venues, you know. And they went down to describing the shape of the club and the lighting and the parking lot and the cars in the parking lot and everything. So I took pictures of every club that I went into for about a month to six years. A little over a month, randomly sending if it was something that was anywhere close, and sent it in back to my friend. I said, "Is this it? You know, is this it? No, 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 no. Is this it? Yeah, maybe. You know." So, yeah, maybe. So, time went by, and I was back in Austin, and I was going through some pictures. Because I had just moved out of the country, and I was going through some stuff, and I found some family photos, and I said, "What the hell, man?" So I found a picture of that my grandmother was in the picture, and I took a picture of it with my cell phone, and I sent it to this guy, and he goes, "Oh my God, that's the lady," and it was my grandma. So, and he said it stopped after that.
There was actually a point you said when one of the photos you sent him from the venue was kind of a match.
Yeah.
And you said there was like a minivan out in the parking lot.
Yeah.
So you just hung out inside until that cleared out.
Certainly did.
Yeah. These premonitions sometimes not something to be ignored. So I don't blame you. I think I would have been...
Call me superstitious, but...
Yeah, better to be cautious than
the
dead.
Confirmation,
right?
The confirmation was there for me anyway. So,
but when you sent the photo of your grandmother, you didn't say anything about who this lady was. You just snapped a picture of it with the phone and sent it over and waited for the reaction. And it was.
He said that was her. And it made sense. So.
Yeah, I think maybe there are listeners out there that needed to hear that story. Maybe you feel like that there are people, that your loved ones that have gone on that are still looking out for you. Maybe you don't have the faculties to hear from them directly, but they're your guardian angels. They care enough about you that they'll reach out to you through whatever means. If it takes getting in touch with a friend to relay the message. But you say this wasn't necessarily a usual thing for this person. This was not an everyday thing.
It wasn't. I mean, they'd had activity in their home. They live in their families lived in the same home and on the land for generations.
Folks, Stevie Tombstone's joining us on Speaking of Strange tonight, sharing some personal experiences, and maybe we'll share a little music, Tales from the Road. Anyway, a great... inspiration to me over the many years since my wild and woolly young years listening to him as a member of the Tombstones and continuing to listen to him as a songwriter, a troubadour, a regular roots and blues and country songwriter. Look forward to more of this conversation coming up after the break. Joshua P. Warren speaking of strange on WWNC 570, the Talk of the Mountains. I'm Vance Pollock, joined in the studio by special guest Stevie Tombstone. Tombstone's not your birth name, is it, Stevie?
No, sir.
We won't.
Not your Christian name.
That's a stretch, too.
I always wanted to be in a band that had like Joe Queer, Joey Ramone. I always wanted to have like my band be the name, you know, like and have be like Sam something.
I got stuck with that. The record company stuck me. I just started calling me Stevie Tombstone.
It works.
And I went, okay.
from the sparse record credits back in the day, it was always Stevie T. My friends heard me talk about Stevie T, Stevie T.
Yeah.
And then it was a couple years later in Atlanta, a buddy of mine that had played in a high school punk rock band with me had gone on by that point to play drums with a group called the Genitorturers out of Orlando. And
the Genitorturers
were playing with the Tombstones up in Atlanta, I think. And my buddy Andy approached you and said, Stevie, my buddy Vance had talked about you guys all the time. We actually did a really bad cover of Tombstone Tales. but it was fun.
Cool.
So, yeah, it's funny how sometimes these groups that they're not on the national radar, they're not on the global radar, but if you grew up around Atlanta, and to some degree in the Southeast, and you listen to sort of underground rock and roll, this nascent sort of swampabilly, psychobilly sort of stuff, you knew about the Tombstones, man, and it's just amazing. Here it is 25-plus years later, and I just sit across the table from you or go over to the Root Bar in East Asheville and sit there and pretty much have you to myself, a private performance with Stevie T, while there's a few of the locals are just sitting over there drinking craft beers.
What is your name, son? That's what they always say. You should do that for a living. I kind of like that, man. No pressure, you know?
Yeah.
O-teen, the hotbed.
You're not bad.
Maybe some people from the veterans quarters across the street.
Yeah, man.
Stagger in and catch a few songs. But no, that's great. In addition to how many have you sat down recently and numbered how many original songs you generally sprinkle through a set? There's at least several dozen originals that you can still play at the drop of a hat.
Yeah. Easily, probably 30 tunes, you know,
right.
And I've got more than that in my
Yeah.
Catalog.
And then a lot of fun traditional sort of tunes in your repertoire. Good stuff. There's the Robert Johnson connection. And I know sometimes, depending on the way you spin this story, I feel like it's a little uncomfortable for you, but it must have been cathartic when you cut the album and the title track Greenwood a few years ago. Because the story, Stevie Tombstone's connection to Robert Johnson, basically, again, the label thought it was a good idea, maybe a good publicity for you to go down to Greenwood, Mississippi, and find the grave of blues legend Robert Johnson.
Yeah, I mean, the guys in the band and our roadie came up with the original idea to do it, and we agreed that we wouldn't have gigs if it wasn't for Robert Johnson. So, but then, you know, the people that market your stuff do their job and it gets spun, you know, that's what happens. And so the intent changes.
But what better fit than a band called the Tombstones to put a tombstone on Robert Johnson's
grave? I can hear him sitting around the office now.
the PR guys. Yeah, this is going to be great. It's going to be huge.
We'll call the band the Tombstones. That's what we'll do.
Sell a million copies.
Yeah, Sandy Wexler, man. That's what's our manager.
But at that time, no stone on any alleged Robert Johnson grave.
No marked grave.
And depending on who you talk to, he was in different places, but nobody seemed really sure, because it seemed like at least 25 years before, certainly any white people cared where Robert Johnson was buried. So along in the 60s is, I guess, when there was sort of a roots appreciation for blues started to kick in again.
Yeah, man,
especially with City Kids.
That box set was already out, you know, and he didn't have a marker.
They weren't interested in honoring the man, but they were certainly interested in reviving the music.
Honoring the catalog.
Yeah, honoring the dead presidents, you know, making a little more money off his ghost anyway. But Robert Johnson, Johnny Shines was a good friend of his. Those guys gigged together.
He was this Robert's sideman for quite a while.
One of the rare photos that there's arguments whether this is a photo of Robert Johnson and Johnny Shines, but Johnny Shines' daughter says that that's her daddy. With Robert Johnson. You've seen that one of the two. That one only surfaced in the last 10 or 15 years.
If even.
What do you think about that photo? Do you think that's legit?
Oh, it could be Johnny. You know, if his daughter says it is, it probably is. It looks like him. I spent a lot of time, you know, not a ton of time, but I spent a lot of time with him. And it's certainly plausible.
Right. So there were a few of these blues players who actually shared a stage, if you can call it a stage, shared the corner of a barn with Robert Johnson back in the 1930s. A
couple of pallets on the floor, you know.
Sure. And even some of the guys that were playing with him those last few months when he was reportedly staying on the Star of the West plantation just outside Greenwood, Mississippi. Johnny Shines tended to believe that the Robert Johnson final resting place was where you...
We got the location from Robert Lockwood Jr., actually.
Okay.
He gave us, as far as I can remember, my goal wasn't to improve my memory at that point in time, so... As far as I can remember, we had directions from his son, or at least permission, and we went there the evening before to figure out where we were gonna go the next morning, and the alleged activities that took place when we went out there in the evening, which didn't happen, were what the folks that were collecting money for another marker, were, that's what they made a big deal about. So anyway, we went to look for it, found it, got it the next morning, and then Johnny put the marker on the grave.
And that's now one of three markers, and probably the most humble, and I've read a lot of fans saying it's their favorite. It's a small marker, flat stone that says Resting in the Blues, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the one that you guys put there in the early 90s.
Yeah, but probably between 90 and 92.
But the local people were not real excited about that.
And, well, we did. They weren't too excited about us, I don't
right?
think.
But you let Johnny do the thing. Did Johnny actually went out to the graveside?
Yeah, he
and,
did
and
it.
Presented
Rick,
the stone?
Rick Richards was there from the Jordan Satellites, and he suggested that we just stick in the car. And I thought that was a grand idea. So so Johnny got to take care of it.
So one thing that is certainly legitimate about that site is that Johnny Shines, one of the last surviving blues men who actually performed alongside he traveled with Robert Johnson.
Yeah.
I think he
oh,
was
yeah.
up in Arkansas
they,
with him. And
they went to Canada and back as far as I know.
Johnny Shines probably spent as much time on the road with Robert Johnson as anybody and was mm-hmm. Certainly one of the last surviving fellow bandmates, so to speak. So at least you were with him on his journey there at the end, and like you say, if it brought an old friend a little bit of closure, then that was a significant moment in the history
yeah.
of the blues. And maybe a tribute to the passing of that generation, because it wasn't too many years after that Johnny was gone. And
yeah.
hell, now they're all practically gone, because if any of them were still kicking, they'd have to be 100 years old.
That's right.
But anyway, the Robert Johnson story, and we won't even get into the rumors of his pact with the devil and all that sort of stuff, unless you want to, unless you have opinions about that. Maybe we'll touch on that, because some people may be listening. I take for granted that when you say the name Robert Johnson, that everybody knows who that is, but just not true, is it, actually?
No, sir.
And in his hometown, at that time, there were plenty of people that...
They didn't know who he was down at Shoney's. Johnson Party of Three.
We'll be right back chatting with Stevie Tombstone on Speaking of Strange.
Pretty close to the horse's head right now. You've been mugged and fingerprinted. You're taped. You can change names, routes, cars. But eventually we'll nab you. Sure there's nothing you want to tell me?
Yeah, I got one thing to tell you. I reckon you can do all you say. When you first you got to catch me. If you can.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of strange, that's Ouroboros Boys, local dark surf outfit. And the sound clip at the beginning, Robert Mitchum telling off the revenuers who tried to confront him about transporting white liquor. Of course, from the movie Thunder Road, shot here in Asheville back in 1957-58. Anyway, now an underground classic, and I was just telling our friend Stevie Tombstone about the Thunder Road cult. People who like car culture, gearheads and stuff like that, they love Thunder Road. And here around Asheville, actually, they kind of, I think a few years back when they had the 50th anniversary, Mitchum's son was in town, and they kind of made a big play of it. I think Keeley Smith, who played opposite of Robert Mitchum in that, I think Keeley's still kicking. Maybe a few of the other minor players still living. Thunder Road, that's worthy, at least, as a underground cinema cult favorite shot right here around Asheville. Stevie, the Tombstones, and in your solo career, Stevie Tombstone, you were getting tattoos before getting tattoos was respectable, wouldn't you say? It seems like shortly after the Tombstones, one of the first time you showed up on my radar kind of doing your solo thing, is you were playing like biker conventions and tattoo conventions. You got quite a bit of ink yourself. So you hung around with some of those rowdies.
Just a little.
Good folks. People you want to stay friends with in any case, right?
Good folks, man. When it all goes down, they're going to be running things. I'm just kidding. No, I got him for safety's sake when I was young.
Right. Should any of this zombie apocalypse nonsense actually happen, then those are the guys that are going to be holding out. Yeah, every
Not the kid at the taco shop, man. They just got a whole sleeve done. I'm talking about the old dudes with the faded touch.
Yes, man. Yeah, the greens
like
and the ink's kind of green and spread a little bit. Patina, the real deal. Songwriting, Stevie, we want to talk about that. I often, I've done a bit of writing, a little bit of creative writing, I'll say, and occasionally it's just like the stream of consciousness. Where is this coming from, man? When inspiration strikes, what does it feel like, and what do you chalk it up to when you're on fire, when you're writing stuff that you don't even really have a sense of where that's coming from?
Well, the first probably half a dozen times it happens, you're not aware enough to if you're smart, you'll write it down, but you're not, you don't understand what's going on to some degree, and then you get the ideas really fast. The ones to me are the ones that write themselves, like they're almost I don't even like to use the word channel, because it's not like that. It just kind of comes to you either in part or in whole, kind of done. And if learning how to differentiate, like how much of that is valid, you know?
Almost so, like it was already out there, but you just caught a glimpse of it. Huh?
Yeah, I mean, and it happens a lot too. With, I don't know if it's there's always parallels. I don't like to listen to. I love to listen to music, but I don't like to listen to music. I don't listen to a lot of my peers, because I am trying not to pick up any information and let it all sort of be whatever pops in my head. But there's some kind of cosmic strings connecting everybody, because, you know, you get those similar ideas and somebody on the other side the planet's got the same idea, you know, so... it's just a matter of figuring out when that's going down, I guess.
It is almost a magical feeling, though. It's strange. I would like to like to have that happen more, and I guess it's a matter of just tapping into that, just writing a lot. Even if you aren't working on a new album or recording or whatever like that, are you generally, is a creative process, are those doors always open, Steve?
No, it's not always the case. It just depends. It happens a lot more when I'm on the road because I'm separated from day-to-day distractions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm kind of in a bubble. And then whenever I'm stationary, I'm playing catch-up. So I tend to get it more when my subconscious mind isn't preoccupied, you know.
Fascinating. Just a little peek at the creative process and how it affects one of my favorite artists who I'm feeling lucky to be in the studio with tonight, Stevie Tombstone. Maybe we'll get you to break out a guitar next hour
Or
break a guitar. You're listening to Speaking of Strange, Vance Pollock welcoming you for tuning in, and I hope you'll stick around with us. The Dark 30's coming up in a little more than an hour. Just thought you might like to know. We'll be right back.